Hey, I'm Jane Lindholm. I'm the host of Vermont Edition, and I'm just popping in to tell you that this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Yesterday afternoon, the U.S. Senate sent President Trump a major defeat when 12 Republicans joined together with the chamber's 47 Democrats to disapprove of the president's plan to transfer several billion dollars from other programs to build a wall along the border with Mexico. The president cited his power under the Emergency Declaration Act to make that transfer without congressional approval. Senator Patrick Leahy is the senior Democrat on the Senate Appropriations Committee. He strongly opposed Trump's plan because the senator says only Congress has the right to appropriate money.
When President Trump declared a national emergency, he cited a crisis at the southern border, but it's become more and more evident he did it for only one reason, to do an end run around Congress and the Appropriations Committee and use taxpayer money to build a wall on the southern border that Congress has refused to fund.
The bill is now on its way to the president's desk because the U.S. House has already passed the legislation. The president is expected to veto the bill. If he does, it will mark his first veto as president. So what's the significance of this vote? Is it merely a temporary setback for the president, or does it show a widening gap between the Senate Republican caucus and the president that could surface on other issues? These are just some of the questions we have for our guest today, Senator Patrick Leahy. Senator, welcome back to Vermont Edition.
Thank you. It's good to be with you, Bob.
Senator Leahy joins us from the Senate Recording Studio in Washington, D.C. I'd like to thank them for their help in making this program possible today. Senator Leahy, President Trump said he needed these funds to help build a wall along the Mexican border because what's happening there right now constitutes a national emergency. There was a recent report that said there are a record number of people trying to enter this country from Mexico. Is the president wrong?
The president is wrong in thinking that this whole immigration situation can be handled by a wall, incidentally, he has promised dozens of times Mexico would pay for. Well, the wall is about as effective as the president's promise that Mexico is going to pay for it. They won't. American taxpayers have to pay for it. All of us believe in border security. But all of us also believe you have to have a specific way of doing it. Some places a wall works, some places a fence works, some places electronic surveillance works. But what we have is a situation where a Republican-controlled House and a Republican-controlled Senate voted on this three different times. And the president didn't see any emergency there. Although last December, when the Congress voted $1.8 billion for security, he vetoed that. It said it wasn't enough. Shut down the government for 35 days, cost tens of billions of dollars in disruption because of that, and then signed a bill that gave him $500 million less than the bill he vetoed, but he signed it. You know, this has become more more play-acting than anything else. It is not a case that anybody wants to do away with border security. We all want border security. But we don't want a vanity wall so you can point to pictures and say, that's the Trump wall. What I want to see is immigration reform, similar to what they Senate passed a few years ago and the House refused to take up, immigration reform, working with these countries to clean up their own act so that you don't have desperate parents and children trying to escape gang warfare, rape, murder, virtual slavery, and find a way to make this work. So, you know, this is not a national emergency. The fact that so many Republican senators voted against the president demonstrates that. But look what he's going to take the money from. We have housing for our men and women in the service that even the press is now reporting. A lot of them are infected with mold, with vermin, with asbestos, and so on. We're putting in this money to repair them, make it safe housing for the men and women who are in our military. He's going to be taking money from that.
But just to be clear on this, Senator, you're not saying don't put any money into the wall. I mean, you have voted for efforts to – right? So a wall is – from your perspective, and correct me if I'm wrong, a wall is part of the solution.
A wall is part of the solution in places. For example, go down near San Diego. It has helped. I mean, I've actually visited the border. I've gone along – in the boats along the Rio Grande on the American side. But you can also see when you do that, if you actually take the time to do it, not do sloganeering at a fundraiser, but actually take the time to see it, you'd find a wall does not fit all. And the symbolism of this to fill out a campaign promise, he's never going to keep anyway. I mean, he finally stopped saying that Mexico is going to pay for it because people are realizing he wasn't telling the truth on that. And let's talk about smart security along the wall. Some places are along the border. Some places the wall works. We'll give them money for that. Other places, everything from drones to clearing brush to actually having horses for the Border Patrol to ride over tough terrain, these things will help.
We got this email from Gary, who wrote us, President Trump has made it clear that he wants this border wall more than anything. He can have the wall for all I care. The cost of it is a rounding error when it comes to the size of the government. The real question is, what do we want that would be worth trading for the wall? Do we want DACA, higher taxes, or changes to the Affordable Care Act? Do you see the possibility of giving the president some money for the wall as part of an immigration reform package?
We have given him a lot of money for the wall. He has made vague promises on immigration, but then even when he's made these promises to Republicans and Democrats, he hasn't kept his word. And that makes it difficult. I've been here with Republican and Democratic presidents. We sat down, we negotiated things, and we walked away knowing, no matter which political party they belong to, and once you agree, they're going to keep their word. A lot of my Republican colleagues are frustrated. I mean, that's why after he vetoed $1.8 billion, they turned around and said, okay, we'll give you $1.3 billion and spend the other part on something worthwhile. And that's what happened.
Today in the program,
It's just like things change where they are. I was listening to your weather report before we came on the air. I'm going to Vermont tomorrow morning. My sister Mary, who lives there in Marshfield, had told me watch out for the dirt roads and mud season and all that. But that's a demonstration. We different seasons, different terrain. We do different things. And it's the same thing along the border.
Let's talk to Rust, who is calling from Newport. Hi, Rust. Welcome to the program.
How do you do, sir?
Great. What's on your mind?
What's on my mind is, everybody talks about the money, the wall, and everything else. My question is, Congress and the Senate has had over 30 years since Reagan's amnesty period to come up with reasonable immigration laws to stop the flow of illegal immigration. So why hasn't that been done through many different administrations?
Well, one, I'm glad to hear somebody from Newport. As you know, my wife was born in Newport. But actually, we did pass a bill in 2013 in the Senate. I wrote it. We took months to write it. Had a lot of meetings that went from early morning to midnight. Worked weekends on it. It passed the Senate 2-1 the majority, big majority, Republicans and Democrats voting for it. And the Republican Speaker of the House refused to take it up, even though it would have passed. I think that was a very, very bad mistake. Had he done that, many of these problems would not be there. So we demonstrated in the Senate we could reach that agreement. I'm hoping now with a different speaker and different House, we can try again.
Let's also talk to John, who's calling from Stafford. Hi, John. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Senator, a lot of the problem is that that people come here for jobs, and we should have a way, a more robust way of people being able to use a migrant worker program. However, with the job problem, would you be in favor of mandatory E-Verify and jail time or hefty fines for employers like the Trump Organization who didn't use E-Verify and brought illegal workers in?
Well, some of the same people like the Trump company have always lobbied against any real check because they have thousands of migrants who do not have a right to be here working, whether it's in agriculture or anywhere else. What we should do is look at the places where this can help the United States. For example, in Vermont, we have to have, I think, a significant improvement to allow migrant dairy workers to come and stay for several years and help out. You know, the idea that they could come for a number of months, leave, and then come back. Well, you can't tell a dairy cow, okay, we'll be back to milk you in 5 months. Just stay there. It doesn't work that way. So I've introduced a bill along with the senior senator from California, our largest state, Senator Feinstein, that would allow that. To make it very, very specific, I want people working. I want them to be able to help in our economy, create jobs. I look at when my maternal grandparents immigrated to Vermont from Italy. They began a stone carving business. They hired half the town in Vermont where they were. They created jobs that would not have been there otherwise. You can point to other examples like Steve Jobs' father coming here as an immigrant. Now that company that Mr. Jobs started employs hundreds of thousands of people.
Senator, you've got a group of House Democrats, a lot of them in the newly elected caucus group, who support efforts to impeach President Trump right now. Do you think the time has come to initiate impeachment proceedings?
You know, first, as you know, I was a prosecutor. Secondly, I have been on the Senate jury on a presidential impeachment case. I like to have some facts first. I think it would be foolish to do anything until we see the Mueller report, until we see what was involved. It is easy to run around and say, let's have an impeachment. Well, it would not get through the House, certainly would not get through the Senate. And I think rather than rhetoric, let's go to reality. Let's get the Mueller report. Let's put our efforts to make sure we know what's in it. If there are high crimes and misdemeanors in there, of course there'd be impeachment.
Well, as you mentioned, the Mueller report is going to be sent to the Attorney General first for his review. And the Attorney General says if there are allegations in the report that don't have substantial evidence to support those allegations, that he's going to block the release of that information. And as a former prosecutor, do you agree with that decision?
I think because of what this means for the whole country, just as what happened during the Richard Nixon investigation. The country has a right to see all the material in that report. Remember, you're dealing with Robert Mueller, who's going to be very straightforward. Now, Yesterday, we had a bill up on the floor that said we should make it public. A single Republican blocked that resolution. I think that's a mistake. I think that for the sake of the country, suppose the Mueller report comes out and says President Trump did nothing wrong, that Russia had nothing to do with this, that nobody committed crimes, well, then the American people should see that. Conversely, if it says Russia was involved, if it says those within the Trump organization, of course, many of them have already gone to jail, have done things wrong, then the public should see that.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Bob, who is calling from Walden. Hi, Bob. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Carol Anderson, in her excellent book, One Person, No Vote, describes how the Republican Party used voter suppression to steal the elections of 2016 and 2018. I'm wondering what you, Senator, can do and will do to prevent that happening in 2020. Thank you.
Thank you. Excellent question. As you know, in the Shelby County vote in the Supreme Court, when that went through the Supreme Court, it was literally a matter of hours when several states were setting up things so they could suppress votes. That was wrong. It is hurting us. H.R. 1 is already passed in the House. It includes my auto voter registration bill, an automatic voter registration. That, I'm glad to see the House has passed what I want. Now I want the Senate to do it too. I mean, we take it for granted in Vermont that we can vote. I can walk into town hall in Middlesex, where Marcel and I vote, even if we have to be out of town like we were during town meeting, we can vote in advance. We make it easy to vote. It's also why we have one of the highest voter turnouts in the country. Secretary of State Council has worked very hard to make it possible. We have, I think, 95% registration in Vermont. It should be that same way in other states. We saw in a couple of the southern states where they clearly worked to block votes from areas where predominantly African American, changing the location of a voting booth, putting it in an obscure place, having hours that are difficult to even know when it's going to be open. This is America. Everybody should be able to vote. I've urged that in Vermont. In fact, Marcel and I even did an ad one year when I was up urging everybody to vote, whether they voted for me or my opponent.
Senator Leahy, do you think that a law that requires a photo ID for someone to vote, is that an example of voter suppression in your mind?
You know, my parents have voted forever in Montpelier. I think the last time I voted, my mother was close to 90. I doubt if she ever had a photo ID in her life. But she was a taxpayer in Montpelier. She'd always voted there. She shouldn't have to have a voter ID, a photo ID. It's easy enough to prove that you live there, you belong there. Do that and get registered as voting. But if the state is going to put up requirements, if they're going to put up things that will exclude parts of the population, in this case, with her, somebody in her age category, you know, that's going to stop voting. And again, I talk about the Shelby case, North Carolina and other states passed a voter a picture ID law almost within days after it. It was obvious they were using it to try to suppress votes.
Senator, the other day, Senator Elizabeth Warren suggested that big social media companies, including Amazon and Google, should be broken up because they're too big and they're trampling on the privacy rights of consumers. Do you agree?
Incident, just before we go to that, I want to make sure I had my numbers correct. The president had threatened to veto 1.6 on the wall and then signed 1.3, just to get the numbers correct. But it also demonstrates this whole thing has been done more for political posturing than for border security. And I'll take border security to political posturing any day. Now, on large media companies, just as we've seen in the past, when one company controlled all the telephone business in this country and it was broken up and we ended up with others, the same with some of the media companies, I think these companies have grown so. They've been used by the Russians and others to distort things in this country. I think you have to look at them. You have to ask, are they fulfilling their responsibilities? I'm hoping that some of the senators on both sides of the aisle who care about consumer privacy will now get serious and start working on this. I'm happy to work with them. I don't know what the exact answer is, but I do know that our privacy is constantly being invaded, that companies are making money by invading our company, our privacy, and that should stop.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Rob, who's calling from South Lincoln. Hey, Rob, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks, Bob. Hello, Senator Leahy.
Hello.
I just want to call and thank the senator for his continued support as he serves as the vice chair on the Senate Appropriations Committee and allocating funds to the National Institutes of Health, specifically for Alzheimer's disease and related dementias, as Vermont just came out as having the highest death rate from Alzheimer's disease of any state in the nation, that it is imperative that we push against this administration and their cuts to the NIH and funding in these regards. And I just want to say thanks to the senator and the senators on both sides of the aisle and the Appropriations Committee to continue to fund historic increases to hopefully find a treatment and cure for Alzheimer's and dementia. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. As you know, the president wants to cut the National Institutes of Health by $5.2 billion. You want to have a priority? You spend $5.2 billion in the National Institute of Health to look for cures for Alzheimer's or cancer or diabetes or anything else? Or do you spend it on a show wall along the Mexican border? Frankly, as an American, as a Vermonter, I'd like to see the money going into the National Institute of Health. You can't cut them by $5.2 billion. As you know, you can't start medical research and say, oh, we're going to cut all the funding for a few years, but just hang on there. We'll come back in a few years and start it back up again. If this country had done that when they were trying to figure out how to cure polio or stop it from people getting it, we never would have had the Salk vaccine. We never would have had the things that can be done to make sure our children never get polio. But now, Alzheimer's, diabetes, I can name many other areas of cancer, they should be preventable. But it's going to need a huge amount of research to do it. And if the most powerful, wealthiest nation on earth can't do the research, what the heck do we stand for? What do we stand for? Let's stand for our citizens. Let's stand for what's better for Americans and Vermonters and forget the posturing.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Jean, who is calling from Johnson. Hi, Jean. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I think I have a statement and maybe a question, too. I believe that we have Trump as president because the DNC rigged the election against Bernie Sanders for Hillary Clinton, and that's been proven. And I'm wondering why anyone would believe that their vote is going to count if the DNC is going to decide who they want to win and rig it accordingly.
Well, I think that we would probably one question we might ask is, how did Donald Trump win when Hillary Clinton got nearly 3 million more votes than he did? As you know, at the national convention, Senator Sanders and I stood side by side, and we both voted for Hillary Clinton.
Were you concerned, though, Senator, that when you learned about things that the DNC did that seemed to favor Hillary Clinton?
Oh, I do not want the DNC to take sides with anybody. I have stayed that consistently throughout all the time I've been in the Senate. I know when I first ran for the U.S. Senate, there were some within the Democratic Party who thought, one, I was too young. Vermont was the only state that never elected a Democrat. I'd been too tough a prosecutor. They had to have somebody else, and a number of them were proposing somebody who never would have made it. And I'm glad that I just kept right on going. But I think that there have been some reforms there. But I also think that we have to look at the fact that Hillary Clinton got nearly 3 million more votes than Donald Trump, and he still gets to be president.
Would you like to see changes to the Electoral College?
Yes.
So that a popular vote would be the way to elect the next president?
I think the Electoral College made a great deal of sense at the beginning of this country. I think that it bears less now. Or maybe be able to have proportional electoral votes in different states. But I saw Al Gore get more votes than George Bush. He lost. I saw Hillary Clinton get a lot more votes than Donald Trump, and she lost. And I just I think in today we got to have two things. One, we've got to make sure that every vote counts, but every voter can vote.
And speaking of this presidential race, recently you endorsed Senator Bernie Sanders' presidential bid. 4 years ago, you supported former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, because I think you said you made a promise to her several years before that. As you look at this ever-widening Democratic field, which is likely to include former Vice President Joe Biden in the next month, do you think that Bernie Sanders is the best person to be the Democratic nominee in 2020?
To make sure we get the facts right, of 4 years ago.
Yes.
I endorsed Hillary Clinton long before Bernie Sanders said he was going to run.
Right.
And Senator Sanders and I are good friends. He knows one thing certainly about me. I always keep my word. I've never broken my word as a senator. He never expected me to break my word. I felt either one of them would be far better than Donald Trump. So I kept my word. Now, I think it was Cory Booker who joked the other day that 2020 candidates mean there's 2020 candidates. But we have a lot of candidates, and certainly Bernie Sanders is one, who could do far, far better than the current president. And I'm hoping that the amount of energy that's going to be there among all of them is going to help. I want to see people registered to vote, and then I want whoever is the nominee to see everybody else coalesce behind that nominee and carry that energy forward. That is the only way the Democrats will win the presidency.
Many of the people who are running, of the 15 or 16 people who are seeking the Democratic presidential nomination, definitely share Bernie Sanders' progressive agenda. This is quite a contrast to 4 years ago. there's some Democrats who are a little concerned that the party is getting pushed too far to the left and that this will actually work to President Trump's advantage in the 2020 election. Do you share those concerns?
You want to repeat that, Bob?
Sure.
We had a little technical problem here.
Oh, sorry about that. There are a lot of candidates who are running in 2020 in the Democratic field who seem to share Senator Sanders' progressive agenda. And there are some Democrats who feel the party is getting pulled too far to the left. And if things go too far to the left, that will ensure the reelection of President Trump. And I'm wondering if you share any of those concerns.
I think that the fact that many take the same position that Senator Sanders did is a compliment to him. And I think we Vermonters should be proud that he has so influenced the debate throughout the country. But that's why you start this early. There'll be a lot of scrutiny of these candidates. And I am sure, insofar as almost any one of them is far more qualified than the current president, that we'll do all right. The most important thing is that we know who's going to be the nominee early and we coalesce behind that person.
I guess what I'm hearing.
And keep in mind that a lot of this talk you hear about, oh my gosh, they're going to get too liberal or whatever, that is the Trump talking point. That's what he tweets. I don't know if he does any work, but he certainly spends a lot of time tweeting. That's the way he feels. I was at lunch with him because of the St. Patrick's Day celebrations, and typically I'm there. That's the luncheon that Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill started, and certainly his conversation with those of us at the table, he likes using that talking point. I don't.
There are a lot of Democrats, though, Senator, I think, who have two questions for the 2020 race. One, they want a candidate above everything else who can defeat President Trump. And two, you have a group of people who want to support a candidate for ideological reasons and that the agenda is very important. And Democrats may have to decide which side of those two questions they want to go on. And I'm wondering how you feel about that.
Let's see. The election is, 18 months or so away. I suspect there'll be a lot of concentration before then. Again, not that Vermont's a microcosm of the country, but I remember the first time I ran for the Senate, there were some who said, oh, he's nowhere near liberal enough. Look at this man. He's been locking up people in jail. Yeah, for armed robbery, murder, child abuse, spousal abuse, fraud, bank robberies. Yeah, I locked him up. They said, well, that shows he's far too conservative to be a U.S. senator. Some of those same groups, well, he's far too liberal to be a senator. He's supported equal rights.
Let's talk to John in Putney. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for taking my call. Senator, you are no doubt aware that even though some senators and congresspeople have said the Green New Deal recently introduced is unrealistic, they agree with its goals, but they don't get behind it, that as we speak, hundreds of thousands of students all around the world are walking out today in strike in support of us saving our planet. What I'd like to ask you is, do you support the Green New Deal?
I support many of the things we need in it. As you know, the Green New Deal has no legislation in it. It talks about how we should do things, and that's fine. But I want to see people take the work, the effort, to actually pass legislation that will carry it out. Climate change is a crisis. I'm proud of the young people in getting involved and pointing that out. It is a crisis that is going to affect their generation and all generations. But let's start putting things in that we can pass and do it. The Land and Water Conservation Authorization Funding Act. the Clean Air Healthy Kids Act, the Workplace Democracy Act, the Family Act. Let's bring up the legislation. Now, anybody can say we're for this. It's like saying I'm for curing all these ills. But we all are. Bring up, do the hard, difficult work, work that takes days, evenings, hearings, weekends. Write the legislation, and then let's fight to pass it. I will support things that improve our environment, that bring about clean energy, that stop or hinder the scourge of global warming. Certainly the legislation I passed in the past does a lot of that. One of the reasons I wrote the Organic Farm Bill, it took me 5 years of fighting, not talking about, but fighting to get it through. We did. I wanted to stop the use of pesticides and other things. Everybody thought, great idea, but it'll never make any money. It's a $53 billion a year industry now. You can have energy conservation and make it pay. Certainly we do in Vermont. We have a very large number of people employed in energy conservation. I suspect it is going to be one of the growing industries for the next generation.
Senator, you mentioned you think climate change really poses a crisis for this country and for this planet. What do you think would be the single most important thing that Congress could pass to deal with this issue right now?
I don't know if there is a single thing. Certainly we have to keep the emission controls we've had, not crank back on them the way the Trump administration wants to. I would find alternative sources of energy, use those. But I think one of the things we can do right off the bat, the Trump administration moved to reverse the CAFE standards, the automobile standards on emission. Bad mistake. Let's go back to those. They were making a difference, just as our involvement with the Coalition for Clean Energy around the world was helping. We should get back into those things. Incidentally, and this gets off, I was making notes to myself when we went into the ad. Talk about socialism, and now are these people socialists? Read the history books and see what a socialist Franklin Roosevelt was because he wanted Social Security. Think of the people who are called socialists because they wanted Medicare. How many people who are now using that term would ever vote to do away with Social Security or Medicare?
Senator,
so let's go back to the Paris Accords on climate. Let's go back to our CAFE standards. Those are relatively easy things we can do right now and then build on it.
I was going to ask you that during the course of the hour, you've been pretty critical of President Trump on a variety of issues. I'm wondering, in general, it seems like the national economy is doing pretty well. The unemployment rate is its lowest in many years. Inflation is not very high. Does President Trump deserve some credit for the national economy?
I think he does, but let's look at this. Let's look at the trends. It is following exactly the trends. Remember when President Obama took office, we were in a huge recession. We'd had the stock market had collapsed. During every single year of the Obama administration, the economy dramatically increased. Stock market went up, employment increased, and this gave something very good to Donald Trump, and they can continue on it. Where I would think, though, he has made a mistake is supporting a huge tax cut that benefits the ultra-wealthy, gives benefits to corporations not for creating new jobs, but for simply doing stock buybacks, which bring about multi-million dollar salaries for their executives, and the economy is not helped by trying to get into tariff wars, which have devastated some of our farm industry, our manufacturing industry, and others.
Let's see if we can get a quick call in from Dan in Colchester. Hi, Dan. Welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks so much for taking my call.
What's on your mind today?
So I have four kids between my wife and I, and one is out of college, one is about to graduate, one is 8 years old, and one is five. So I have a keen interest in how we help kids finance higher education. We know that it's going up at incredible rates over the last 20 years. My kid who's out of college basically has a mortgage and no house. I do have a proposal. I can share it very quickly. You know, much like, for example, in a country like Israel, where people have a mandatory two-year military service, we could have kids have a mandatory civil or military service for 2, 3, or 4 years, and whatever years they spend, we as a nation remunerate them by paying for their higher education. And this would help us get kids out of college into the workforce with consumer buying power, because I can tell you my oldest has absolutely no money to spend at the end of the month to invest in the economy because it's all going to the banks and the student loans. What do you think about that, Senator?
Well, you'd obviously support efforts to continue the GI Bill for those who do serve in our military, and I'm glad of those who do it and take make use of it. I'd be happy to discuss in far more detail. We have almost no time left, but as you know, I've done a number of things on national service from medical bills on. Bob, and I'm not trying to rush, but before we leave, please, everybody, stop and think about what happened in New Zealand. And if we don't, all of us, decry all kinds of anti-religion, whatever religion it is, if we don't stop this trying to pick and choose among people's ethnic backgrounds, their religious backgrounds, then we fail as a nation. This happened in New Zealand, but when I find somebody doing that, saying he's trying to spark the fires in the United States, we have all got to stand up. I don't care what party we belong to, what religion we are, what the color of our skin is, stand up and say, this is not America, and we have got to reject it.
That is all the time that we have today. Senator Patrick Leahy, many thanks for taking the time to be on the program today.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. I'll see you in Vermont tomorrow.